And thank you, everybody who's already on hold for Dr. Shelley Kerr, and we'll get to as many calls as we can for her coming up this hour. By the way, those of you that will order the After Dark newsletter, 1-888-727-5505. Remember that Colbrin Bible piece, which right now we're working on for a special guest coming up in just a few weeks who can read about it in advance. Share that with our friend Glenn in just a couple of weeks on Coast to Coast AM. Also, great interview coming up on a book I just got in the mail called The China Study. But more on that later on. And more on the story of the Canadian Prime Minister, former cabinet member for Canadian Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, and his comments about the U.S. Now, if you haven't been to the website, go to coasttocoastam.com and you can link up to that piece about what he has said. It's been all over the wires and people have been sending me copies of this story coming out of Canada. And he says he's trying to stop the U.S. from getting the planet into an intergalactic war. Now you got to go read what he says about the United States, about the Bush administration, and we'll get back to more on that topic coming up shortly on Coast to Coast AM as we left it in our first hour at a point where it was just getting going, and I promise you we'll get back to it. But we're so enjoying our conversation about this device, this ancient tool in the book Divination of God from Dr. Shelley Kerr. And before we get to those phone calls, let me also say, if you're going to coasttocoastam.com, look at that personal letter from George Noory about helping out a child somewhere in the world tonight. You can sign up. Coast to Coast can have a big turnout on this. You can sponsor a child. Go read George's notes on that at coasttocoastam.com and sign up. We would be very grateful. And Dr. Shelley Kerr, you'll be glad to know we've got a bunch of calls hanging on for you. Let's get to him right away. Eric is on the wild card line about this ancient prophetic tool. Morning, Eric. You're talking to Dr. Shelley Kerr.
I have something on my mind about Canadians or extraterrestrials.
Okay.
I want to talk about Sir Isaac Newton.
Okay.
In addition to his brilliance in mathematics and inventing calculus, he was sort of a closet alchemist, and he was also very interested in religion. He didn't believe in the Holy Trinity, and he kept that to himself, but he was strong in the Catholic faith as well as the Anglican faith in England. But he was trying to develop the Philosopher's Stone, and there was lots of writing on it that was recently sold at auction in the UK.
Right, I read about that.
I just wonder if maybe he wasn't onto something from Exodus and the Philosopher's Stone and possibly talking to the Almighty.
Now, that's a really good point. Or, as we called it in the Harry Potter books, the Sorcerer's Stone, as it got rewritten in the
I thought about that too.
American version. So, Dr. Kerr, is there a connection there?
I think there probably is. I've heard about this research, and I guess if we could conjure up Isaac, we could ask him ourselves, but
okay.
I think that it's highly likely.
Well, describe the Philosopher's Stone. What was the Philosopher's Stone supposed to do?
I mainly know it from the work of Casey. Some people think it's the stone lapis, a stone of alchemy, opening up the third eye and opening up exactly what we're talking about, a connection to the divine knowledge of the universe.
Right. And if one possessed it, then one had the possibility of sort of a direct connection to the divine.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Let's go Darren, wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Shelley Kerr. Darren?
Hi, Ian. This is Darren from Wisconsin. Let me give you a little background here. I was born and raised in Utah. I was born and raised as a Mormon, and I've never heard of these stones that she was speaking of that the Mormon church supposedly have. I would like some more information about those. Where would I get that?
Urim and Thummim?
You can see it in the Doctrine and Covenants, in the Book of Mormon, and in the Pearl of Great Price.
Okay.
And if you have those, you know, handy, you can use them, or you can actually get online and just Google it, and you'll see information online about it, because all of those doctrines are actually electronically accessible to you.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Darren.
Thanks, Darren.
Hey, is anybody selling Urim and Thummim on eBay?
I don't know.
I mean, I honestly,
yeah, I'm selling them on galactichealing.org, but they're not the real bells and whistles kind that you're looking for.
Well, no, I'd go along with even yours. So you have some that you can purchase at your website then.
Yeah, they can get a special coast-to-coast special with the book and the device.
Oh, cool. Oh, very good.
Not the bells and whistles, because you and I are going to work on that, Ian.
I swear to you.
I'm serious.
I'd walk around with that, and I would have that on. And I love the idea of ritual purification before one does it, to take it very seriously and to see what could come of it. Dan is east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Dan?
Yes. Hello.
Hi, you're talking with Dr. Shelley Kerr.
Hi, Dr. Kerr.
Hi, Dan.
Yes, Dan from Mobile, but originally from L.A. I've heard of the breastplate of Aaron, and I was wondering if that was the same that you're talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about in the book of Exodus.
Does that have anything to do with the astrological signs, these stones that fit into particular months?
I don't think that that is related, but if it is, it's something that I'm not aware of.
Well, you do have the correlation of the numbers of 12. So,
hey, I'm going to have to look into that, Dan.
I mean, there's something there in that. I mean, I don't think, but because there's, what we think of, and thank you, Dan, what we think of as astrology as being, something that you would look up in the newspaper or something for your horoscope for the day. There are some connections, obviously some very ancient connections between what the ancient astrologers would have looked for. And they kind of overlap, although they're not symmetrically related to each other.
I would have to analyze that. Yeah. I'm going to do that.
Let's go Donnie, first-time caller line on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Shelley Kerr. Donnie?
Yeah, this is Donnie from North Carolina. I'm looking at Exodus now, and the 12 stones are emerald, sapphire, diamonds, agar, amethyst, and all that. Anyway, I was wondering about the size of it, the way this reads, that it'd probably be about the size of a postcard, but it's used gold chains and gold rings, and it has to be put on the side of the ephod underneath it. And it says it's put upon over Aaron's heart. And so, you think of a breastplate as like an armor breastplate, but this size of it, the way you describe it, it might be smaller, but with it's with chains and gold rings that might just cover the heart of Aaron.
Right.
That size.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it's described.
Yeah, it's got the four rows, and so you have to figure, how big a person would be, and then there's three stones across, so I feel like they're probably maybe 2 or 3 inches across by a couple inches high, the actual stones.
But, if we're going to make this cost effective, we're probably not going to go for a big giant diamond, right? We're going to
go for a
smaller diamond in order to be able to do this. thank you, Donnie. Let's go west of the Rockies and Darren on Coast to Coast AM, or is that Darlene? I'm sorry. Couldn't read my own handwriting, Darlene.
Hi.
Hi, you're talking with Dr. Shelley Kerr.
Hi, Shelley. And
hey, Darlene.
Ian, it's nice to speak with both of you.
Thank you.
I've studied tarot and the Bible nearly all my life. And as far as I can tell, this isn't much of a device. It's actually an ornamentation that is used as a divination tool, much like the tarot, or runes might be used, or a couple of stones that you carry around, one for yes, one for no. But these were specifically gems, according to the 12 tribes of Israel and the 12 signs of the zodiac. The three there's four.
Right. But if one of them lights up.
In the fourth row. Oh,
but
yes.
But if any of them lights up, then it really changes the whole thing, doesn't
it? Right, it would. But I don't get that. I don't see that there is. And what I sense that it is a vibratory, like when you polish a stone, you know, you can tell a live stone from a dead stone.
Right.
By the spark in it.
Right.
That's the type of illumination I'm pretty sure that was going on there.
Well, thank you, Darlene. I appreciate that. Dr. Kerr, comment?
I understand what you're meaning about that stones kind of become enlivened. I don't know. I mean, the theory is that behind the breastplate where the 12 stones were, that these other two stones may have been sitting there. I mean, you know, we just don't really know for sure.
Well, let's get a break in. We'll come back and we'll see how we're doing on our phone call situation with Dr. Shelley Kerr on a very kind of unusual night on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, thank you, Dr. Shelley Kerr, for the conversation we've had so far about the book Divination of God. We're talking about a breastplate, maybe some amulets, but definitely some stones and how they have been used over the centuries to divine the will of God, as it's written about in the book of Exodus and also in other religious traditions as well. And several callers hanging on for you. It'll take us to the bottom of the hour, and we'll hang on to this topic. And we thank everybody's patience in waiting for us to get back to the other one. Matt, first-time caller line on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Shelley Kerr. Matt?
Hi, Ian. Hi, Shelley. Hey, I wanted to give you a little background. I am a former Mormon on exactly what the stones are that the Mormons believe.
Okay.
Okay.
They actually date back to the Tower of Babel, and it's told that a group of people needed to travel in enclosed boats, and they needed a light source. So their prophet went to a mountain, cut out, I think, 10 stones, and the finger of God touched them and lit them. And so these stones were passed down through the generations and eventually fashioned onto a breastplate. And what would happen, well, this is how it's been described, is two metal pieces would jut out from the shoulders and hold the stones so that you could see through them, almost like reading glasses. I don't know if that sheds any light on the Urim and Thummim of Mormon origin, but that's where it comes from.
Great. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt. We'll go to Dennis, west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Dennis?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I've been studying this for a long time, and this kind of thing. 12 is a number that means the establishment of power. That's why we have, for example, 12 jurors, a dozen, a baker's dozen is 13. The reason for that is in the old religions, the ancient Egyptian were related to the Hebrew, and even the religion of the British Isles, the old religion. And so, yes, there were 12 stones, each relating, as in astrology, each astrological sign has its own stone. And I'm not a totally expert in this, but I can kind of give you a general idea of what this is about. The 12 hours in a clock, these are the fates. They were the 12 daughters of Ra, the sun god, 13. The sun god represents the Lord of Lords. The 12 are the lords of each tribe of Israel. And there were generally 12 tribes with a Lord of Lords lording it over each tribe. And he basically had the gift of, he was a prophet king. And so he had the gift of prophecy. And so he could kind of tell what was going on in the future. So we're talking here about prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm generalizing here, and I want to keep it short. I don't want to get too detailed. I could end up, you know, I don't want to get up on the pulpit here.
Okay, well, is there a question in here, too?
Yeah,
or?
No, I've just been listening. I've missed quite a bit of this. And
well, let me get Dr.
I just want to add to it a little bit and then hear your commentary on that, see if that goes along with what you've learned.
Okay, then go ahead. Dr. Kerr, what do you have to say about this, about the idea of the ancient link to Egypt? You're down with that, right?
Yeah, I think that the tool originated in Egypt just because of the evidence that we have that says that there were priests in the city of Memphis who were wearing breastplates that are very similar to the one described in the book of Exodus.
Right. And so what do we take away from that with its connection to Egypt and then also, you know, how it's influenced by the Egyptian connection?
I think that everything is influenced by the Egyptian connection personally.
Okay. And I want to ask you before you go about your research on parallel universes here in just a second, too, and
yes,
where that is in this. Joseph, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Joseph?
Hello, Ann.
You got a question?
Doctor, we're fixing to study this in Sunday school, and it's just perfect. We're fixing to get into the discussion of the temple and the outfit that the priest wore, and one thing that fascinated me was some of that. I keep thinking of the guy in Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, with the headgear and the breastplate. That's what I'm, you know, visualizing.
Yeah.
But there was, our preacher mentioned that there was bells on this outfit, that as long as you heard these bells moving when they were inside the temple, everything was okay. But when the bells would quit ringing, something had happened. And another thing he mentioned was something called an ephod, if I'm saying it correctly.
Right.
Where God's voice would come out. Where was this located, and how did that operate?
Okay, I think what you're talking about is that when the priest once a year would go into the tabernacle, into the Holy of Holies, and the legend has it that the priest would have a rope tied to his leg, and when he would go in there, he needed to be of absolutely pure heart and mind when he went before the Holy of Holies and the Ark of the Covenant to speak with the Lord. And if he did not have pure thoughts, he would be struck dead right there and then by the divine flame, and the rope was tied around his leg so that they could pull him out in case of his death. And then he would take the string with the blood on it of the scapegoat, and if it came out white when he left the temple, if the blood was gone, then that meant that the sins of the children of Israel had been forgiven by God. And then the other thing you're discussing is the ephod. I think that's how to pronounce it. It's spelled E-P-H-O-D. This is like the priestly vestments. So there was the whole direction in the book of Exodus about how the tabernacle was to be set up and that the priest was to wear the ephod, which was basically the priestly garments, and then the breastplate went on top of that and the Urim and Thummim went behind that. And there's a whole detailed description on this in the book of Exodus, chapter 28, if you look in there. So, yes, this is right along the lines with what you're studying, and I really appreciate your call.
That's a really good question. In fact,
that's great.
It's interesting, isn't it, that ephod and iPod just sound so similar to each other?
There's something going on there.
Well, and I mentioned this before once, too, that the symbol that they use for the Apple iPod, for the random symbol, where it looks like, you know, if you're going to have a random selection of songs,
yes,
it is an aleph from the Hebrew alphabet.
Hey, what about the apple itself? In the Garden of Eden.
With a bite out of it.
I think we need to call the Apple Corporation.
What are they up to?
Tell them to build us this thing.
Well, we have one or two questions we're going to get to for sure. So you hang on just another little while longer, and we're holding off the flow of questions and comments about the situation in Canada and the commentary that you can find at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back then with a few more with Dr. Shelley Kerr on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. They're giving me very clear warnings they're going to raise my mic here because I was singing along with the Four Seasons. So they were just jumping in. We're going to raise your mic now. Okay, so I'll stop singing. So we have two people hanging on for Dr. Shelley Kerr, and I'm going to ask you about that parallel universe thing before we go, and then we'll move on to the subject, which we know a lot of people have been trying to get through to for a couple of hours now. But I've so much enjoyed what we've been talking about, and I love the fact that you've got so many people out there who, seemingly by their comments, they've already been studying this, and they've already been talking about trying to make one themselves.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You're tapping into something here on the book, The Divination of God. You can find out more by linking up to her at coasttocoastam.com. Dr. Shelley Kerr has been working on a book here, a small idea about something which hasn't been discussed maybe in popular circles, but it was never taken out of the Bible. I mean, it's been there all along, on how to make this device that may or may not sort of transmit a message from God. So let's go to Melissa on Coast to Coast AM. She's on the wild card line for Dr. Shelley Kerr. Melissa?
Hi.
Hi.
I just have some questions. Well, not really questions, but comments about, I've been also studying it and looking into it, and I've read several books on the subject, and I just wanted to put my opinion out there and ask Shelley what she thinks. From what I understand, the two stones are the Urim and the Thummim, mean light and perfection.
Right.
So the Urim is the lightning stone, and the Thummim is the stone of perfection. And basically, the lightning stone equivalents out to being like a ruby laser, because the lightning stone was said to have been used by Solomon and many others going way back into Egypt to be able to cut precisely. And the first laser was made from a ruby, and ruby is not one of the stones, one of the 12 stones on the breastplate. And then the Thummim, the stone of perfection, that basically equates out to be monoatomic gold, the white powder. That's the philosopher's stone, that's, the manna, the white conical cakes that were fed to the Egyptian kings. It has properties of levitation. And so both of these technologies were used as a technology, as a tool to operate the Ark, and they're actually both have been rediscovered today in modern use. The Thummim with superconductors, and, of course, the ruby, the ruby with the serpent coiled around it.
Okay.
The laser has to do with, like, the healing and the use of, it goes back to, the ruby was known as the stone of wisdom and healing, and the Essenes inherited from the Egyptian therapeutics. And is that making sense to you? Have you heard all that information before?
Yeah, I have heard... I have not specifically heard of the Urim being the ruby, but I've heard, as I said earlier, about the connections to King Solomon through the Freemasons, because they really did mention the Urim and Thummim in some of the rituals of Freemasonry. As far as the monoatomic gold, yeah, that is really big right now, and I talked about that in the book Edgar Cayce's Guide to Gemstones, that people are using that. As a sort of modern philosopher's stone, you can actually order this now, and you just dab a little bit on your tongue, and it kind of puts you into an altered state of consciousness.
Have you done that?
I tried it, yeah.
Did it work?
Yeah. I don't drink, and I don't do any kind of anything, you know, so for me it was a little much, because it really does put you into some kind of an altered state of consciousness.
What's the property in it that does that?
It really is powdered gold, white powdered gold. And when you dab it on the tongue, the purpose of it is that it's supposed to raise the frequency of the body.
Okay.
And in so doing, it puts you into an automatic alpha state, like where your brain waves have slowed down into a heightened awareness alpha state, similar to the state of hypnosis, but real deep. But for me, I'm real sensitive. It made me feel kind of... freaky, to say the least.
Really? Describe
but I'm
freaky.
Sure some of the listeners would love it.
Describe freaky. What does that mean?
Freaky.
I mean, yeah, what happened?
I don't know. It made me feel like I was on something.
They have...
And it's
they have,
legal, I guess.
Yeah, I would imagine so. They have shavings of gold in, I don't know, I don't know what the alcohol, Goldschlager is what it's called.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the... I don't know what the actual alcohol is, rum,
yes,
but I don't know what it is.
Cinnamon liqueur with the gold flecks in it.
Right, right. So schnapps. It's schnapps. That's what it is.
Yeah,
with the flecks of gold. So I wonder whether that has a similar effect.
I've had Goldschlager before.
Oh, you have?
when I was young, Ian.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Well,
after that talk about not drinking, so, and you've had Goldschlager. So, all right, let's get to Charles, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Charles?
Yeah, I was wondering, if in the past, it seemed like only a few people were authorized to build and use the Irma Thurman. And she states that she was guided to place... To put the knowledge of the Irma Thurman in the book?
No, wait. You're saying Uma Thurman. It's not. That's the actress, Uma Thurman. This is Urim and Thummim. Just so we're clear that we're not talking about using Uma Thurman to talk with God.
That's trouble with that.
That's okay. I totally get that. I just wanted to be clear.
Okay.
All right. So go ahead and restate your question then.
Yeah.
To put the device in a book, you know, for all those that don't have the calling to use or build the device, you know, which some may think that they're in direct communication with God and ask questions such as, should I give up my baby or should I stay in an abusive relationship or, you know, is she ready for that kind of responsibility or is this all about more book sales?
Well, Dr. Kerr?
There is, you know, there's a theory in using this device that it is something that is reserved for the priests. But I think that in life in general, the point of the whole book is that mankind, since the dawn of time, has used different methods to try to connect with some kind of a higher power to say, you know, why am I here? What is the meaning of my life? I mean, whether we go consult with a friend or whether we sit in prayer or whether we open up the Bible, there's a technique called Biblemancy where we just, you know, people ask a question, God, I need to know something about the situation I'm going through. And then you just open up the Bible and just look at the first thing.
Right, that comes up.
That comes up, and you know it always has an answer. And so I just feel that this is, it's just bringing to light another aspect of the Bible. I mean, but the thing is people every day in day-to-day life are trying to find answers to their meaning.
I just want to say, I mean, in a way, I think it's an unfair question, although I see the truth of Charles's question. In a way, it's kind of a do you still beat your wife question. It's sort of framed in an unfair way to be able to get a pure answer, because it really shouldn't be a matter of the responsibility that Dr. Kerr is going to accept because somebody reads the book and decides they're going to use this method on whether or not they're going to stay in an abusive relationship. The answer to should I stay in an abusive relationship is no. The question of should I try to make this a non-abusive relationship and work, you know, with a counselor or something or try to give this person another chance, that may be a very different question. So, I mean, should I give up my baby? Should I do anything else? These are questions people are going to be asking, and they're going to use whatever methods they can to try to come up with an answer. It is not Dr. Kerr's responsibility that somebody should, you know, find an answer or look for an answer in an alternative method like this. People still need to use their critical thinking brains, and I hope that they do. Thank you, Charles, for jumping in. And let me ask before we go, are we living in a parallel universe, you and I, Dr. Kerr?
Yes, we are, Ian.
This is a reference to some of your other work, isn't it?
Yes. I wrote a book called Beyond Reality, where I took people via hypnosis into altered states of reality in parallel universes.
And so is there same lives but with different outcomes?
Yeah, the gist of it goes back to kind of how we began our conversation, that I really believe that there's a lot of suffering in the world and that a lot of the suffering comes from people's perception of reality. And in the book, I document some case studies of people who had, for example, very severe medical conditions. And so using that same process described earlier, where we just imagine them floating up over a timeline, I'll have them Like there was a guy who, you know, had a kidney failure. And so I had him float up over the timeline and go back to the source event where his soul, this is getting back to kind of our last caller. You know, I feel like we all, to a certain degree, need to take responsibility for the things that we're doing and choosing here. So I took him back to the place where he, quote, chose, or he decided to learn something by this, through this illness. And then I had him imagine that he chose a new path where the illness was not there. And then you can progress the person 30 years or 40 years or however much into the future, into a new reality where they do not suffer from various medical conditions or whatever, and then talk to the cells of the body and remind the cells, like, what does it feel like to be healed and, you know, and whole and complete or whatever, and not have this medical condition, because I think sometimes the body needs to be reminded of what it feels like to feel good.
Well, it's very interesting work. I'd love to continue that conversation to sometime on another night, perhaps, and link up to Dr. Shelley Kerr at coasttocoastam.com and continue the conversation with her there. And thank you so much for your time and your patience on this unusual evening.
Well, thanks, Ian. I really enjoyed it.
You did too. And I look forward someday to having that breastplate finished. And okay. Wouldn't it be cool to try it out on the air and see what happens?
It would.
All right. Let me know if you make any progress on that. I'm going to look into it on my end. Okay.
Okay. Let me know.
All right. Thank you so much. God bless you. And we'll come back then. The rest of the calls back in the topic that we got started with earlier in the evening, which we promised we'd get back to. On exopolitics, the call for a special meeting of the Canadian Parliament by the Honorable Paul Hellyer. I threw out the question earlier, what do you hear in this story? What do you think it means? If you don't know the story I'm talking about, link up to it at coasttocoastam.com, and we'll be right back. I'll give you more details, and we'll start taking calls on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, Paul Hellyer is a former Canadian Minister of Defense and Deputy Prime Minister under Pierre Trudeau, who is probably unfamiliar to most Americans. Over the last couple of months or so, his name has popped up a few times. Had a startling speech at the University of Toronto, in which he drew attention to his belief that UFOs are as real as the airplanes that fly over your head, he said. And he goes on to talk about that he's very concerned about what the consequences might be of starting an intergalactic war. I lost track of the number of people who sent me this story in the last few days, and we just got to talking about it in the first hour when we took a break and said we'd come back to it, and so we are. And here it is, this guy Paul Hellyer says, the secrecy involved in all matters pertaining to the Roswell incident was unparalleled. The classification was, from the outset, above top secret, so the vast majority of U.S. officials and politicians, let alone a mere allied minister of defense, were never in the loop. Still, he says, the U.S. military are preparing weapons which could be used against the aliens, and they could get us into an intergalactic war without us ever having any warning. The Bush administration has finally agreed to let the military build a forward base on the moon, which will put them in a better position to keep track of the goings and comings of the visitors from space and to shoot at them if they so decide. Hellyer's speech brought a standing ovation at the time. He demanded that the time has come to lift the veil of secrecy and let the truth emerge. And so I was asking people in the first hour, what do you hear in that story? We talked to several different Canadians who also had responses, some saying that he's really kind of an obscure guy and hasn't heard a lot about it in the last couple of weeks, and other people that said, no, not true. He's been the topic of all conversation in Canada. We go west of the Rockies where Eric picks up the conversation on Coast to Coast AM. Eric?
Yes, Ian, listening on KTAR based out of Phoenix.
Glad to have you. What are you? Great. And hello, Tisa Lasorte, if you're, or Tisa Vrabel, I'm sorry. Hey, well then, what is it, how do you, what do you hear in that story? What do you make of that?
I think it's a fear. It's selling some fear that we can't sell at this time. So we have our neighbor selling the fear. I hear that where we want to build bases on the moon to protect nuclear-powered laser generators that won't be used or not intended to be used against extraterrestrials, but against our neighbors here on Earth that might become our economic and military enemies.
So you're saying we're going to build something there, but it's not focused into space, it's focused back at Earth.
I would say so. And we presently have these kind of generators in space, but there's a much larger swath that can be had from a vantage point of that of the moon. And to think what a nation like China might think of this, well, they're in a race to get to the moon as soon as possible, because once something like this is established, their fate is pretty much put into whatever we will have them be.
That device sounds a lot like the thing that's used in the movie Die Another Day. Die Another Day. Yeah, that's what it is. I mean,
to borrow a phrase from the brave Senator Murtaugh, just because the former Prime Minister of Canada says that UFOs are as real as airplanes in the sky doesn't necessarily mean it's true. I personally believe that UFOs are 99% of all that have been seen here on Earth lately, at least, are Manhattan Project-based apparitions that are leading to this fear. We can't sell the fear against UFOs right now due to a lack of credibility. I don't know if we could ever sell it, but
okay.
Canada's helping.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate that. In fact, again, I will try to get many more people from Canada coming up next hour. Your thoughts on the leadership here by this former Canadian Minister of Defense trying to get Canada to be a force in preventing intergalactic war east of the Rockies. A gentleman named Texas on Coast to Coast AM. Texas?
Howdy. How y'all doing?
Good. What do you think?
Oh, it sounds quite interesting. Sounds like they're preparing for the final stages of the great battle itself.
Explain what you mean by that.
The Battle of Armageddon.
And that this will be fought with space aliens?
No, they're not aliens. What are you familiar with from the scriptures?
Well,
God show that all human government will be wiped off the planet.
Well, what does this have to do with that? I mean, the idea of stopping intergalactic war and putting a military base on the moon.
What human government sees and the reality in many things are two different things. One is bent on destruction, and the other is bent on talking about taking the bad element off the planet. There will be no Al-Qaeda's or nuclear devices of mass destruction or anything else permitted to go past the great battle itself.
Okay. I get that part. I guess I still don't get the connection from this and the rest of the story, but that's okay. Maybe you could explain it 10 times and I still wouldn't get it. But
take a look at chapter 12 of Revelation.
Well, I know all about Revelation. I'm all over Revelation. I just don't see how
chapter 19.
That's fine. I just don't see how this ties in with the former Canadian Minister of Defense saying he's trying to stop intergalactic war being led by the United States. But that's okay. That's why I asked the question. What is it that you hear in this? That's what Texas hears in the story. We heard what Eric hears in the story. What about you? And what about you Canadians? Ready to take a leading role in saving the planet from destruction by an aggressive, intolerant, invading alien army? That was what one earlier Canadian said, that we're gonna knock off the wrong spaceship. The next thing you know, it's intergalactic war. We'll pick all this up coming up next hour on Coast to Coast AM.